There are a lot of things that can destroy our confidence, whether it's confidence in our faith or confidence in something else. Bullying is one of the things that seems on everybody's mind these days, and that can shake people's confidence. There's even something called cyberbullying, where you can do it without even facing the individual, and it can hurt. People can struggle with that. Criticism can be another source of lack of confidence or shaken confidence. I believe it was Mark Twain who said once, you know, I can go about 2 weeks on a good compliment. I think that probably illustrates just how important it is for people to be built up rather than to be torn down. John's first letter is really brimming with this idea of confidence. He mentions it four times in the letter, 2:28, 4:17, 5:14, and here in chapter 3, verse 21, he mentions the idea, I want you to have confidence. Perhaps it was, we think, that John's church was sort of reeling from opposition within and opposition without. And people needed encouragement. They needed to be confident that they were on the right track. And so he attempts very hard to give them that. I want to look at several confidence shakers this morning. And we'll start by what I simply would call internal confidence shakers. Things that go on within ourselves that shake our confidence and that make it hard for us to feel like maybe we can really do things well. So I'm going to mention a couple things, and I'm just going to say, all right, pick one of these if it's you. The first one that John, I'm sure, is addressing is the one of guilt, maybe guilt and shame. And John has already told us in chapter 2 and verse 2 that Jesus is our atoning sacrifice. He says, if anyone does sin, we have Jesus as our atoning sacrifice. I don't know. It just seems to me that it ought to be a little confidence builder. That's why we participate in the Lord's Supper every week, to remind us that Jesus sacrificed himself to forgive us of our sins. So if guilt is one of those things that's a confidence shaker, just know and believe that Jesus, in fact, does washes us clean. How about uncertainty? That may be another confidence shaker. He does assert to us that if we confess our sins, God forgives us. So if we're still uncertain about it, just know that there's a way that you can be on God's side, and that's by simply admitting that you are a sinner, and that not that it's okay, but that it's okay that God has done something about it. And so maybe that would help a little bit in your uncertainty. Now, John will confidently assert, among other things, that God is love. And if you're one of these kind of persons who are really wondering whether or not God really loves you, I kind of get that one in some ways, because sometimes you feel like the universe or the world or society just kind of doesn't really care all that much. John asserts to us, God is love. I know it may not always seem that way in our experiences, but you know what? We just have to believe what John tells us. And maybe we suffer from certain inward anxieties of our faith. You'll notice, as many times as I've encouraged us to read the Psalms and use the Psalms as your prayers, that David will often say things like, Lord, where are you? I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that's basically what he does. Where are you when I need you to answer my prayers? He doesn't always see it. He doesn't always get answers right away. And so it creates some anxiety for David. He always comes back to faith. He always seems to manage to come back and assert his faith at the end of the Psalms. But the fact is, there are some inward conflicts that we have that we do wonder sometimes. We don't know whether God is really hearing us at any given point in our spiritual lives. I kind of get the impression that sort of the normal course of our spiritual development, that there are those times when we just don't always see, but we have to assert our faith during those moments. I think John is trying to give us confidence that just go ahead and be confident that God is with you. And John's assurance has come in several different ways. He will tell his audience, the one who are reading what he's saying, in chapter 2 and verse 28, that if you do abide in him, you can be confident. He will tell them in chapter 4 and verse 17 that you can be confident at the day of judgment, that you are going to pass through okay. And he tells us in chapter 5, verse 14, that whatever we ask for from God, he hears us. I won't say he gives you everything you want, but he's listening. And for us to, maybe there's not anything more confidence building than to realize God, in fact, does hear us. And he answers our prayers in some way. And here in chapter 3, the passage that we're kind of looking at today, or at least focusing on somewhat, John gives both reassurance and a challenge. He kind of reassures us that God is confident, but he kind of warns us against complacency. So somewhere between confidence and complacency is where we live our spiritual lives. And I think it's important for us to see that. One of the things John tells us here in chapter 3, in verse 20, is that God is greater than our hearts. That's a pretty important concept, isn't it? That God is greater than our hearts. We know that God knows everything about us. We know that he knows our hearts, but he's greater than that. He's greater than what our hearts tell us. And that's really the problem, isn't it? Because inside, deep within ourselves, we tell ourselves a lot of things. It's where we often lose our confidence. John says, and he wants us to remember, God is greater than that. If you get that, you're on the way to confidence. And he says, we receive because we do what he asks. And maybe that's the complacent part. We don't just get this confidence by just sort of existing and coasting along, okay? And it seems almost counterintuitive for John to do this for us. But he does kind of give us this balance. He wants us to be confident, but he doesn't want us to be complacent. He doesn't want us to lose our balance. So he will tell us we receive because we do what he asks, because we are obedient. And I won't say John is saying here you have to be perfectly obedient, but he says you got to have the desire and the attempt and the work to do and be obedient. And he says if you're that, you got confidence. Because you're not complacent, okay? And John is trying to encourage us in that. He's trying to get us to walk this line where we're somewhere between those two things. But at the same time, I want you to think about how you can be confident in what God has done for us. Those might be considered sort of internal confidence shakers, the things that happen to us within our own hearts that sort of keep us from having a successful life, feeling like we can be confident in going on and doing what we need to do. But there also are some external confidence shakers. You know, I kind of even thought, do I want to say it that way? Because in reality, even those external things have an internal component. In other words, we're affected by external things because of what's going on inside of us. But let's think about the things that happen from outside of us that may shake our confidence in some ways. Jesus brings up, number one, the troubles of life. And I don't even need to be more specific than that. In the parable of the sower, Jesus reveals in Matthew chapter 13 and verse 22, he says that the sower went out to sow, and when he sowed seed among certain areas, in particular, places where thorns grew up and choked the plants, he says those thorns are like the cares of this life. Those things can be pretty intimidating, can't they? And again, you know, you can fill in the blank for whatever thing you think is the trouble or cares of this life. Whatever they are, they can be pretty intimidating. They can be things that I like to call vacuums. They suck the life out of us, okay? And we kind of allow some of those things to grab our undivided attention. Do you know what I'm talking about? Well, I don't know if I'm going to make enough money this week. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make ends meet. Am I going to be able to keep my job? You know, or whatever it might be. Things that you have to deal with every day. People you have to deal with every day. Those things are the kind of things that sort of take away our confidence. And they just, you know, they're time vacuums too. Because we get into this habit of worrying about what shall we eat, what shall we drink, what shall we wear. Matthew chapter 6, Jesus talks about that. We get anxious, okay? Those things take away our confidence. You remember the excuses that people gave at the great banquet for not going. Busy with a field. Busy with a business. Busy with my new bride. All right. Just busy. Just got too many things going on. All these things are sort of overwhelming me with what I need to do. In this same passage, Jesus will talk about the deceitfulness of riches and how that those things also distract and perhaps cause misplaced trust. We think in those things is what constitutes real living. And, you know, we think maybe being famous constitutes real living. Those things are deceitful. They take away our confidence. They take away our time. They take away our trust in God because we put our trust in all those other things. And so the troubles of life, the deceitfulness of wealth, they can all be things that shake our confidence from the outside. How about persecution? You know, in that same parable, in the parable of the sower, Jesus brings up the rocky soil as well. And how that when the seed was sown on rocky soil, there wasn't any depth to it. There were too many other parts of the soil that were keeping it from growing deep. It couldn't get deep enough to kind of nourish itself. Jesus assured the disciples any number of times that these kind of things were going to happen in Matthew chapter 5, verses 10 through 12. He gives us even in the Beatitudes, blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and say all kinds of evil things against you. He says, you know what? That's the way they treated the prophets. And then he says something very unusual there, which I've never quite been able to get a handle on. He says, rejoice and be glad. Because they're treating you the same way they treated the prophets. Basically, it means you're on my side. If you're getting treated the way I was treated, you're on my side. I don't know. I just, you know, from a personal standpoint, I still struggle with being able to rejoice at it. It hurts. You know, you feel like you're left out. You feel like you're, you know, in another world from where sometimes people are. Peter reminds his group when he's writing in 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 12 through 14. Listen to what he says. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. But rejoice insofar as you share Christ's sufferings, so that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed. If you are insulted for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the Spirit of glory and God rests upon you. Well, isn't that what all of us want by being here? We want the Spirit and the glory of God to rest upon us, to be with us, to assure us, for us to know that, you know what, I'm on God's side. If we want anything in our lives, I think we want to be able to say, yeah, we feel confident we're on God's side. I don't know why you would be here otherwise, because that's really what you want. We can be confident of the justice and rightness of Christianity. I think that's the point that the writers are trying to say here. God is not only greater than our hearts, but he's greater than our troubles. That's what we're called upon to believe. God is greater than our troubles. There's a third thing that I kind of didn't know how to categorize, because I've talked about internal things, and then I talk about external things, but it seems to me there's one other thing that may be a confidence shaker for us, and for lack of a contrast, because I can't do anything other than internal and external, I mean, there's no other thing I can compare or contrast here. I simply call them vision blockers, okay? Vision blockers. And for that, I would like you to turn to Mark chapter 11, verses 20 through 26. A familiar passage where Jesus tells the disciples that, you know what, if you really had enough faith, you could move mountains. Now, I don't know how many of you have been to the Rocky Mountains. I've been to the Rocky Mountains quite a few times. And they are indeed a sight to behold. The grandeur of seeing the Rocky Mountains. I'm sure some of you have seen sights just as grand, perhaps. Maybe the Grand Canyon or beautiful places like that. They all inspire us in some way, don't they? But you know what? Those mountains are also fraught with extreme danger. One of the things that hikers have to learn when they're hiking the Rocky Mountains, most likely, unless you're going to camp out up there somewhere and you found a place of good shelter, you got to get off the mountain before lunch. And the reason you have to get off the mountain before lunch is because the Rocky Mountains create their own weather patterns. And more often than not, they're pretty violent. Lightning, rain in enormous amounts, which can cause flash flooding if you're in a bad spot. You get literally washed away in a flash flood. Okay? Just extremes of hot and cold in the mountains. And those storms tend to develop right after lunch, when after the sun has come up and produced the heat on the mountains. The environment there can be very violent. So in spite of the grandeur, the mountains can be fearsome. It can make us afraid. And I don't know, but I tend to get to think sometimes about the settlers who had to cross the mountains to get to the west. What they went through and how difficult it was. You know, we can drive through on cars on certain highways. Can you imagine what it was like to them for them going through the mountains on carriages and horse-drawn things? And you know, you didn't make it, you couldn't do it in a day. It took several days, I'm sure, at least, maybe even weeks, depending on how many people there were and where you were going. But Jesus is talking about a different kind of mountain here, isn't he? But it's interesting that he uses the mountains as a metaphor for this. Jesus is not talking literally. We know of no case in history, in recorded history, anywhere where any of the disciples said to a mountain, get up and go, and just be moved. So the disciples knew he wasn't talking about literally moving a mountain from one place to another. He was talking about the obstacles that get in our way, perhaps of doing the will of God or of our faith or of something else. The obstacles that get in our way are like mountains. And they become confidence shakers, don't they? We cannot see how we can overcome them. I read a little bit this week about Frank Capra was a movie maker. The one movie that you're most familiar with is It's a Wonderful Life. Jimmy Stewart, Frank Capra produced that movie. He made that movie. He also made a movie in 1939 called Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Was a movie starring, of all things, Jimmy Stewart again. Okay, and he was Mr. Smith. He was a young man going to Washington. He wanted to get a few things done. Frank Capra, at one point, wasn't sure whether he wanted to make this movie. And an interesting thing happened to him. He went, while he was in Washington, to visit the Lincoln Memorial. And while he was there, he heard a young boy reading some of Lincoln's words to his father. Apparently, the father wanted his young boy to know these things, to be inspired by the words that Lincoln said about freedom. And after Capper had been there and heard him say that and saw that happen, he said, you know what? There's probably a lot of other boys, young people, who need to hear those same words. And so he decided to make this movie. And despite the fact that the movie was somewhat unpopular among the politicians of his day, because basically in the movie he portrayed the politicians as the one who were the ones who were in the way. Okay, of what Jimmy Stewart was trying to do, even though at the time he was a politician. But they didn't particularly care for it at first. But Frank Capra was inspired by the words of Lincoln about freedom. And he said, people need to know this. Can we turn to Jesus' words here to be inspired again? That we can move mountains? Jesus tells us we can. Okay? And I think maybe this is a little bit of a problem we have of vision. Let me ask you a couple of questions. I'll ask you a good, a better, and a best question. The good question is any mountain too big for God? That's probably not a good question because we all know the answer to that. Of course not. We don't believe that any mountain is too big for God to move, be it a literal mountain or a metaphorical mountain. A better question might be, do we believe that with God's help we can move mountains? Well, I think most of us would at least give a kind of tentative yes on that one. Sure. And maybe we say it because we're supposed to say that. I don't know. But yeah, we believe that Jesus told us that to inspire us, to tell us that nothing would be impossible for us. But the best question, I think, is, will you participate in the mountain moving business with God? When Israel was given the chance to do that, they said no. When they first stood on the border of the land of Canaan, and they were told, go in and take the land, of 12 people, only two of them came back and said, we can do this. 10 of them said, no, we can't. And they infected everybody else with their negativity. Will we participate in the mountain moving business with God? We've already said we believe God can do it. We've kind of perhaps said that we will participate with God, or at least we said that with God's help we can do it. The question then becomes, will we? If I were a tightrope walker, let's kind of put it in a different context here. If I were a tightrope walker and I had a tightrope walking across Niagara Falls, and I did it several times, and everybody's, you know, it's great. Looks, man, that's pretty good, you know. And I said, okay, do you think I can do it with a wheelbarrow? Well, you'd probably say, probably so. Yeah, go ahead. So I did it with a wheelbarrow, okay. And then I came back after doing it with a wheelbarrow. I said, do you think I can do it again? You'd probably say, sure you can. And then if I said, okay, which one of you will get in the wheelbarrow with me? What would you say? I think that's the challenge Jesus is asking us here. We can move mountains with God's help. Sometimes I really think God is waiting for us to demonstrate our faith and for us to say, you know what, we'll take the challenge, whatever it is, that we will do whatever needs to be done, because we know that with God's help, we can move mountains. I won't even say that you'll always see the mountain moved. I read a story this week, was reminded of a book that I had read several years ago called Witness by Whitaker Chambers. He was a communist in the 20s and 30s who left communism to ultimately become a Christian because he could see that the lifestyle and the views of communism were totally false, totally godless, and totally destroying society. And when he wrote the book, it was very interesting because one of the things that he said, he felt like he was on the losing side of history when he left communism, because communism was so strong and it was taking over so many places. One of the occurrences that he had is he accused one of the other government officials, a guy named Alger Hiss. Some of you may be familiar with some of this history. He accused him of being a spy. Well, when he got accused in his book of being a spy, Alger Hiss, you know, decided to sue him and decided to try to demonstrate that he really wasn't. Well, the problem was Whitaker Chambers had documented proof, and Alger Hiss got convicted, not so much of being a spy, but of perjury. The thing that gets me about this, I read this, that Whitaker Chambers died not long after that. He did not get to see the collapse of communism, even though it still seems to be alive and well in some far-off corners where life is miserable, namely Cuba and Venezuela and a few other places. But Alger Hiss lived long enough that he got to see communism fall apart with the Soviet Union. Why didn't Whitaker Chambers get a chance to see it? I don't know. It's kind of ironic that he thought he was on the losing side, but as it turns out, he really wasn't. My point here is, we see the mountains. We don't always remember that God can move mountains. And God moves those mountains in ways that maybe we can't see because we don't have the power. All we have is the vision of the mountain. How grand they are. How terrible and violent they can be. The fact is, God can move them. We need to have confidence that God can move them. We need to demonstrate faith that God can move them. And that really is the first step, because I really think God waits for us to demonstrate our faith and say, God, We don't know how you're going to fix this. We don't know how this is going to happen, but we believe it. And we're with you on this. We're going to do our best to be in the mountain moving business with you. Confidence ultimately is a matter of trust in God, is it not? Do we really trust that God can do what he says he's going to do? Is our God big enough to overcome our hearts? Well, John says that he is. Can God move mountains by our faith in him? Jesus says that he can. And I simply want us to have that same confidence. We need to reflect very deeply and decide for yourself if you can have that same confidence, if you want that same kind of confidence. You can have it. Abide in him. Keep doing the right thing. Keep expressing your faith and keep praying that God will help you move whatever mountains are in your life. Will help the church move whatever mountains that are in its way. God can do that. He's waiting for us to have the confidence and faith to do it. Maybe you have a need this morning that you would like to have expressed or at least prayed for. You can either come forward and say something, or you can talk to Wayne or I or somebody else in the congregation. There's any number of people here who are willing and able to kind of help you with your needs. Maybe it's somebody that you feel confident you can talk to. We want you to just simply do that. We want you to feel like that your needs can be met. So we ask that you think about that while together we stand and sing our song of encouragement.